Doesn't that computer know who you
are? Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right.
Behold the glory that is me.
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same
thing. I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my friend?
Onto a Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I'd probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk.
Good morning. Yeah, this is Tech Talk. All right. I'm back. We're back, baby. All right. And I think we've got our good friend Mr. Dave Snocky on here too.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. And starting out with James Brown, now you're finally, after all these, how many was it, been 8 or 9 years, you finally have gotten the point. It should be James Brown every week.
I agree. I don't know why. I started cranking some James last Yeah, you know, it's spring. I think that's what it is. It's spring, you know. Get up off of that thing. That's what time it is. You got to get up off of that thing, you know, and start walking, getting around. I got the window open here in the studio. I got nice, fresh spring air blowing on me. Birds chirping. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful day.
That window, I have to tell you, that window actually redeemed. I was about ready to give up radio, and then I walked into that studio and saw that window and said, ah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not ideal for noise, but no. You know, it's okay. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, it's ambient. It adds a texture to the broadcast that you wouldn't ordinarily have.
That's right. We get to feel all urban, you know, when when you have the dump truck going by.
the garbage truck. Or people would actually come up to the window like it was a takeout window and make requests when I was on the air sometimes.
Oh, really? Oh, I have not had that. That would be something.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Hey, we've got a great show today. This is going to be cool. I'm glad you're with us today, because we were talking about this before. I know you have you probably have more interest in this than I do, I think, is the whole Windows 10 deal. It's coming out, and we've got a Windows 10 expert going to be on the phone, Mike Miller. He's been with us many times in the past. Haven't had him on for a long time. I actually played the James Brown in his honor. He's back for us, because we haven't had him on for too long. He's not only going to talk to us about Windows 10 and the new Microsoft machines that are supposed to be the Google Chromebook killers, but also too, he's got a new book about the Internet of Things. So I'm excited to hear about that part of it. And I think we're going to have a great show.
That's very, very exciting. Although, that's very topical. They're saying Windows 10 might be out by summer. They're actually promising it's going to be out by summer.
Yeah. I've been hearing that too. There's previews are out already. Some people have had their hands on that, and it looks neat. Now, I never did adopt the Windows 8. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. Like I said, I think you might almost have more interest in this topic and more knowledge about it than I do. I just haven't jumped into it like that for whatever reason.
You were due to skip a OS. I mean, you've been playing with other OSs as well. You can only do so many at one time.
This is true. This is very, very true. This is, there's only so much you can fit into a day. And I was just talking with the sports guys here. I'm very, very excited. Speaking of a number of things you can do in a day, I think next week, the WRLR radio app, dedicated LPFM radio app, is going to be released onto the Play Store and will be out there, and people can download it and use it. Now, you've had a beta version of it, I know, off and on for a little while here. I think it's stable enough. I feel confident putting it out there, and it's got those basic core features to make those listeners that can't get us through terrestrial broadcast a little happier, hopefully.
Our listeners should be very excited about this, and our listeners that haven't listened to us yet.
Yeah, Yes, yes. New and returning listeners
would be excited about this if they knew about it.
That's it. That's it. Yeah. Well, I'll have to make sure they do.
That's the next step, right? Getting people aware. I'm loving this thing, and I'm not. You know, I'm kind of jaded about lots of stuff, but I'm very excited about this app. First of all, it's a nice. The WRLR logo looks great. The dark red logo on the blue background, it's just gorgeous. It's a very pretty. It'll make your phone look better than it ever has before. And the sound quality is good. You're working out some of the glitches. I was listening to it for hours the other day, yesterday actually, and was very happy with it. And it was very natural. I had my phone hooked up to a set of speakers, and it was wonderful having WRLR around the house.
Ah, very cool. Very cool. Well, thank you. Yeah, and I intentionally in the surveys, I put out a survey to get some responses back on people who were interested in it or comments and so on, and there was some really good feedback from that. But you know, my goal, my thing I'm shooting for with it is, you know, yeah, there's all these other apps where you can listen to internet radio. They're not dedicated to a single station, and that's okay. But it, I believe it removes some of that interactivity that you could have, and it also just complicates the whole thing too much. You know, you go into a tune-in, and it'd listen to us, even if you've saved us in your favorites, you usually got like four or five clicks before you get in and can actually listen to us. The quality's not that great. You lose the stream half the time, and you can't tell anybody what you like or don't like. Whereas we built into this app the a thumbs up and a thumbs down feature, so you can let the DJ know, hey, I love James Brown, do it, you know, or
yeah,
the feedback
option is very nice, and we want to make it easy for the listeners.
Yeah,
we want to make it easy for our listeners, and the FCC didn't exactly hand us great ways to make revenue to support what we do. Mm-hmm. This is another option for that. There's room for a little bit of very easy to tolerate advertising on the app.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's one thing, you know, I've kind of, and I let the station owner know, my personal feeling is I don't want click-through ads, all that other goofiness. You know, I think the best way to go is we've got our sponsors already. We can offer to them as an additional way of supporting the station, or we can support them in a new way, is to have their names showing up on this mobile app. Very easy, very straightforward, and they can see it, and it's not intrusive and all that. So
it's added value.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I'll be adding more things to it as time goes on. I'd like to add the ability for individuals not only to give a thumbs up, thumbs down, but maybe have an option to, you know, sign up for a mailing list or send us, more of like an email sort of note sort of thing, and get more interactivity that way. I've had people suggest, oh, you should link to our video feed. You should do that. At a certain point, there's so many features you can add that you got to say, you know what? We're losing the simplicity, and I want to keep it simple and clean and straightforward. So we'll see.
Yeah, and you say another week or so.
Yeah, it's pretty much ready to go right now. I've got it on. In fact, I've already uploaded it to the Apple Play Store. And this has been a fun part of this, too. At some point, I'm not going to do it today because we're going to have our good friend Mike Miller on in a few minutes. But at some point, I'll talk to people and describe the process, the learning curve that I went through, and the process of not only creating an app and the pieces that went together to make that happen from scratch, but also, too, how to get those apps out onto the Apple Play Store. And I think people will feel, hopefully, by my story, empowered that you can do this. This is a thing you can do. Now, getting to the point where you have an application or a product that would be, you know, distributable on a wider span might be more than some people are capable of or have the time or interest and or inclination to do. But to create a simple app that fits a niche need that you have personally or that is just fun to do, it's not that bad. It's not that tough. If you got some basic programming chops, you can do it.
I think you might have misspoke. You said you've already uploaded it to the Apple Play Store. You meant Google, right?
The Google Play Store. Yeah, I meant the App Store, not Apple Store, but there the you App go. Store. Yeah, yeah. The Google Play Apple, App Store. Yeah.
So that's great news. And now, you know, what's really great about this, and the inevitable is about to occur. We're ready to go viral now.
That's it. TikTok, yeah. WRLR. WRLR is going viral, man. Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't see any reason why not to. Yeah, speaking of going viral, so I'm going to talk about some real tech news. It's not related just to me personally.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, you're changing the format.
Yeah, exactly. It's about time. You know, we got James Brown going. We need to change a few things. Spring, time for a good change. No, I was so excited to see this. I went, oh, good. Oh, thank goodness this morning. And my 9-year-old daughter was like, what? What happened? Did you make it past the next level in Candy Crush? And I'm like, no, it's not quite that good. But it is good. The Justice Department is going to take a very, very close look at the Comcast Time Warner Cable merger. There's a possibility they may either block it or put very restrictive rulings in place and conditions in place for
whether. Is anybody going to go to jail?
Probably not. No, no. There's too much money for anybody to go to jail on this one.
Darn. Well, the news isn't that good then.
Yeah, no, no. And also, of course, you've got fellow cable giant, you know, Charter Cable, if you've heard of them. They've got alternative acquisition plans. So if this Time Warner thing falls through, they could just step right up to the plate and do what they want to. I'm just not excited about the whole merger thing at all. So anything that slows that down, I'm on board with. I think that's
good. I've been kind of keeping track a little bit of what, you know, Google is doing, and Facebook wants to do it as well. They want to expand internet access and all that. And I think isn't Google the one that's floating the balloons? I forget what they're calling that project.
Yeah.
Is that going to be a disruptive technology, do you think? And it might have an effect and a way to bring competition in, you know, in a new way?
I think that it will to some degree, but Google and Facebook, clearly their business is not in providing internet service. Their business is in working on the internet and making that part of it better. I do think that Google is interested in these innovative technologies. And what I find really fascinating is that it really demonstrates that competition does work in the consumer's interest. When you look at the areas of the country that have Google Fiber in them, cost for Comcast services or AT&T DSL services drops dramatically, and it drops to meet the competitive pricing that Google puts in place with their fiber. So do I think Google is going to become the next big monolithic internet service provider, last mile provider? The answer to that is no. Do I think they're going to continue doing innovative things like the balloon Wi-Fi projects and the Google Fiber projects? Gosh, I cross my fingers and hope so, because I want to see them prove and show that, yeah, it's possible to do this. And not only that, but we can do it. And whether they lose money or not, they're still making that case, and it's going to make it tougher and tougher for the Comcasts and AT&Ts and others out there to justify these somewhat what I consider exorbitant prices for what should be
a
basic service.
Oh, no, they're not exorbitant. No, Michael, no, no, no. For 5 megabits a second, I'm paying like close to $50 a month in that range.
Yeah,
that's but it's unlimited though.
Okay, all right. Well, that's good. No, and you know my sister lives in Idaho. She lives in Kuska, Idaho, and she, which is just as small as it sounds, and the and nowhere. And she has a similar difficulties, probably worse even in fact than you do, in that one of her options, the cheapest option, is limited. It's limited access bandwidth. She says that, you know, the pricing is great, but if you're streaming through Netflix or something, you hit your cap in about a week, and then you're just hamstrung, you're crippled. You know, you can do email and stuff, but they bring your speed down so much that you can't do anything else. Or you can pay through the nose and get the unlimited, you know, and get that higher price stuff that will work longer for you, but you pay a lot more, and it's not reliable anyways. So, yeah.
Well, I am lucky. I mean, DSL is not. You know, it's limited by distance from the central office and all that. So I'm lucky. I'm actually I should not be quite as moany as I am about it. But I, you know, once you've, you know, had a super highway, a dirt road's not as much fun.
Yeah. No, it's tough. It's tough. I understand how you guys are though. It's happening. Apple is in talks right now. Supposedly they're going to launch Apple Pay up in Canada. And they're going to start with the Royal Bank of Canada, the Toronto Dominion.
Oh, that's my bank?
Oh, is it the Royal Bank? Well, RBC?
Yeah, I own it. No.
that's
why you use it. Yeah.
It's like the Wild West up there in Canada. You know, anything goes. Dave's Bank of Royal Bank of Canada. The RBC in particular, but also the Bank of Nova Scotia, Montreal, and the Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce. They've all gotten on board and said that... We're okay with doing this from a technical standpoint, but but they are not happy with Apple's fee proposals, and they're also of course worried about security vulnerabilities like the ones.
Yeah, the fraud rates have been much higher than traditional credit cards, and also here in Canada they do a bit of extra security for credit card purchases and such. So I would imagine that additional risk if Apple doesn't quite get that fixed, then that could be a concern.
Yeah. I think, you know, that's always got to be the top issue. And whether they're, you know, how much of what they're doing is simply lip service to the idea of security or not, they have to do it. They have to go through the process of making sure that any new, you know, vector into their systems is going to be one that's safe for both them and the consumers.
Yeah, exactly. But that's exciting. So anyway, so Google, anytime if they want to float a balloon, if they want a place to, you know, launch a balloon for, you know, the super high speed Wi-Fi, they could do it here.
Yeah. Oh, you don't think that would freak people out to see dozens of these balloons with the American flag and Google logo on it floating overhead? With who knows what kind of payload in there?
I don't know. And Facebook wants to do drones, right? That's their thing. Or not. Well, they're going to be like solar powered, ultra high atmosphere type drones, I think, for that sort of thing.
Oh, I hadn't heard about this. This is interesting.
Yeah. Solar power. That's their answer to Google's. Gas. I guess they're gas balloons. They wouldn't be hot air. They'd be gas. So we'll just see. Anybody that wants to do it, Facebook, I'm open. I'm putting it out there on the air right now, making the offer by all means.
Come to Canada.
Yeah.
The unexplored territory. Do it.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah, fix Dave's Wi-Fi.
Yeah, fix Dave's Wi-Fi. Open letter to Facebook and Google. Dave needs Wi-Fi. Well, and we just it's funny we're talking about this now, so I should have saved my title, the podcast that we released. And you can find our podcast. You go to facebook.com/techtalkwrlr or you go to techtalkwrlr.com and you can get our podcast anytime you want to. But I published it last weekend. My title, because we were talking briefly about this, was "Do they even internet up there?" And
yeah.
I guess the answer is kind of. Yeah, hey.
We
slow.
Got the hand crank internet up here. Right?
Yeah. Hey, let's bring some actual real expertise on the phone here. I'm gonna get Mike Miller on. He's which is great too. He does Skype. He's Skyping with us, which is awesome. And which is cool because he actually has a camera hooked up into his Skype, and so I get to watch him, and I get to actually see. It feels more like I'm talking to a real person.
Oh, so excuse me.
Well, you know, it's funny though too. So of course Dave's picture there is very he's got a still picture, but you guys look very much the same. You got the black shirts and the headphones, and Mike's got a legit setup. And Mike, you're with us, I think.
I think I am.
There he is. Mike.
Hi, Mike. Welcome back to the show, I should say.
Well, David, it's been a while. Yeah. And Michael, good to talk to you both.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been too long. I was saying, I'm going to extend on-air apologies, too. We had actually talked and scheduled Mike to be on, two weeks ago, something like this. And I don't know what happened to my head. We had Easter coming up. I spent like 12 hours at our church working with audiovisual stuff and computer things. And my head just wasn't in anything, I guess. So we missed it. I screwed up. It was all on me. But Mike is wonderful.
It's like inviting somebody over to their house when they're on vacation.
Yeah. You
know, so. Exactly. Knock on the door. Nobody help.
Nice going, Michael.
I know. So, but you're here. You're back. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. I'm really happy too that Dave is with us today to talk, because I was just telling people, I feel a little disconnected from the whole Windows thing. Now, I dropped Windows a little while ago. I'd never adopted Windows 8. So the last Windows version that I've really worked with is Windows 7. My laptop is so old and fusty that I wound up putting an SSD on it very cheaply and putting Linux, because there's just not enough oomph there to run full-blown Windows. So I'm excited about Windows 10, but I don't know, should I be excited about it? Is it something that I'll be able to embrace again and move off of Linux and move off of some of these Chrome and alternative OSs?
Well, certainly for those people who are in the Windows ecosystem, which is, you know, about a billion people around the world, this is the version of Windows that should have come out after Windows 7. Mm. Windows 8 and 8.1 was an unmitigated disaster. It was the new Coke of the technology industry. It was a solution in search of a problem, and it was a bad solution. It was just horrible. Everybody hated it. I think I've run into maybe three people, maybe, who like it. And I question
fourth.
Those people's sanity.
I was gonna say, yeah, I think Dave's one of those people. So.
I'm the fourth. I love Windows 8, actually 8.1 anyway.
What do you like about it?
What Windows 8 did is Microsoft back then, this is now 2-3 years ago now, they were very scared that the iPad was going to rule the world and Apple was going to rule the world and they'd be left out. So they needed to get into the mobile computing market. So, you know, this is when they were developing the Surface tablet also. And they decided, well, we need to do our own operating system for tablets. Okay, fine. And as such, Windows 8 is a pretty good operating system for tablets. Okay, it certainly is an interesting alternative to iOS. But they said, and we're going to make everybody who's got a desktop and laptop PC use it also. You know, so all these touch gestures and big full screen tiles and things like this, which work great on a touch screen tablet, are just stupid on a normal computer, which is why everybody hated Windows 8. Now, what Microsoft is doing with Windows 10 is essentially getting rid of everything that they added to Windows 8. I mean, seriously, the start screen, which replaced the start menu, is gone in Windows 10. The charms bar, which is a stupid little way to do settings and configurations, is gone in Windows 10. They've brought back the start menu. They've made it a whole lot better. They've taken all those full screen apps that were in Windows 8, which work good on a tablet, and made them good old desktop Windows apps in Windows 10. Mm. I mean, it's just it's correcting everything they did wrong with Windows 8, and then going further from that and making a better operating system.
Yeah, you know, the one thing that I noticed too, and one of the things that kept me from Windows 8, is Windows 8 always felt it was kind of like OS by committee. And I never got that sense that there was this real coherent look and feel and application execution. Whereas at least the previews I've seen of Windows 10, it looks like it's all designed by the same person. You know, it's clean, it's together. It feels enough like Windows 7 that you're not going to have a huge, you know, change in your environment if you're working with it. And better, more than that, it just hangs together. Looks like it hangs together well.
It really does. I mean, Windows 8, I mean, like I said, it was designed for touchscreen mobile devices. And then they, you know, forced it on a billion desktop users. But they had to keep the desktop in it. I mean, you know, the desktop was still there in Windows 8. It's just you had to, you know, go through a couple hoops to get to it. Mm-hmm. So you had to keep switching between environments. I mean, you started out not on the desktop, but on this start screen. And then, you know, you launched an app, and then you go to the desktop. Well, you want to launch another – you want to open another app, you got to go back to the start screen. So you keep on switching environments. Even if you were on a touchscreen device like a tablet, like a Surface Pro, you had to go to the desktop to do a lot of configuration. I mean, you still had to go to the control panel, even if you were using the full screen interface. I mean, it was just a mess.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody was happy. You had to keep jumping between – environments. With Windows 10, everything's the same environment. It really is desktop-based. Now, I have heard some complaints from some tablet users that Windows 10 is not as good on tablets as Windows 8 was. And that may be fair, but, you know, for those half dozen people who own Surface tablets, you know. I mean, you got to pay attention to who your main audience is. Yeah. And with Windows 10, Microsoft finally got their heads on straight. I mean, I think they canned the entire Windows development team or moved them to another building in Seattle or something. And they put new guys in charge and said, we're going to listen to the customers this time. Obviously, with Windows 8, they did not listen to their users. With Windows 10, they are. They've been in beta testing now with the technical preview since late October, November, something like that, bringing out new releases about every month, new beta releases every month, and they're listening to feedback. I'm seeing changes made from release to release that are obviously based on, you know, users like this, they didn't like this, we don't want this, we want more of this, that sort of thing. They're listening to users maybe for the first time in their history, which is a big change for Microsoft.
And speaking of like the tablet side of things, I think it will be interesting to see how that comes through. They're changing the way they are selling. I actually have a Windows Surface tablet. Was given to us actually. My son went to it was a spelling bee thing. They gave everybody a tablet. The problem with this tablet is the Surface tablet. It's a beautiful tablet. It really is. The screen definition, the hardware, the specs is fantastic. The one that we got, though, it wasn't the Surface Pro, it was the RT. And my gosh, it collects dust. I so desperately wanted to use it and make use of it and have fun with it and enjoy it. And every blasted thing I wanted to do, I was crippled. I could not do it.
I think it's telling that they had to give it to you.
Yeah.
and maybe if they want you to use it, they might have to pay you to do that. Yeah, Windows RT is, Microsoft hasn't officially said this, but it's gone now.
Yeah.
It's just going to all be the official Windows, the regular Windows on everything.
I think the RT, that it stands for Royal Trash, right? Is that the...
Microsoft, I mean, they're right. They needed to get into the tablet space, the mobile space, although that space is kind of plateaued. It isn't going to overtake and replace computers. Now, I don't know why anybody thought that. But Microsoft didn't do it well. I mean, at least with Windows 10, they're back to saying, look, we've got a billion people using Windows on regular PCs. Let's pay some attention to them. And yeah, we'll do some stuff for Windows Phone and we'll do some stuff for the tablets. But really, our focus is on Windows, on desktop, and notebook PCs, and that's where the focus should be. And it shows in the development of Windows 10. I think anybody who's using Windows 7 is going to find it a logical and easily made upgrade. Mm-hmm. And anybody who was forced to use Windows 8 are going to just cheer. I mean, it fixes all the problems. It registers all your complaints. It changes things back to the way it should have been. So, and fortunately, Microsoft is going to make it available for free for anybody who's running Windows 8.1 or Windows 7, at least for the first year of release, they're saying.
Yeah.
So, I mean, free's a good price to, you know, again, they ought to pay us some money for having to suffer through Windows 8.
I thought it was going all the way back to XP. Is that?
I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure about that. If you've got an XP device, I don't think it'll run on it.
Good point. Good point.
I mean, you're talking about
your
dealing
resources
with older
won't be there.
Mike, you're talking about dealing with older computers and stuff at your church. Well, in my church, I just got done redoing all the PowerPoint presentations that they play in the lobby, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And because the 80-year-old lady who was doing them, my first grade granddaughter knows PowerPoint better than this person does. But so it's all pretty and all that. So I go to put it on. And it won't run right.
Oh, no.
Well, I look and see why, and they're using a 14-year-old, honest to goodness, 14-year-old notebook PC running Windows XP.
Wow.
That was what they were powering all the lobby monitors with.
Wow. Well, and now, so, okay, now this is an interesting thing too. So one of the side things that I'm doing, I've been going all entrepreneurial and experimenting with different app development and things like this. One of the things that I've got in my house right now I'm playing with is a Raspberry Pi. And the Raspberry Pi, for those that don't know about it, is a very low cost, essentially Linux-based version of a PC. You can get this thing for, you know, less than $40 usually, with you know, you get a case and some other stuff, and it looks like a real, you know, it's got an HDMI out, all network connections and all this. I've heard Microsoft is talking about creating essentially like an RT style version of their operating system of Windows 10 that will actually work on devices such as the Raspberry Pi, and they're also going to give that one away for free too. And that sounds like that would be something that, boy, with a little bit of elbow grease, you could make that thing, and it's so small profile, you could make that thing work for something like what you're talking about, you know, doing just one single purpose application, just showing presentations on a big screen.
Yeah, I've heard the same thing about doing Windows on the Raspberry. So I think Raspberry Pi, excuse me. Every time I hear Raspberry, I think BlackBerry. And I get all the fruits confused in my mind. But I think that's interesting that they're doing that. And, you know, another thing that Microsoft is doing, and I know you want to talk about this, is they're offering a version of Windows for free to computer manufacturers to use on very low-cost Windows notebooks or netbooks.
Yes.
To kind of compete with the Chromebook market. So, you know, Microsoft is out there. I mean, they're going to give away Windows 10 free to consumers as an upgrade. They're doing it to free to at least some computer manufacturers or some types of PCs. They're talking about it for the Raspberry Pi. You know, so they're thinking outside the box, which they don't normally do in Seattle. I mean, this is kind of an interesting thing that Microsoft's doing.
Yeah. No, I think that's absolutely fascinating that they're willing to do that. It breaks from their tradition so much. And I think it's a great thing. And the price point that I've seen, the expected price point of these low cost, you know, for lack of a better term, these Chromebook killers, is right at that point, that price point that you're seeing the Chromebooks at. So, you know, if the hardware and the software can, you know, work well enough together that you get a good experience out of it, I don't see why there would be anything stopping them. I don't know what would keep them from being very successful in that venture.
Well, I do. It's interesting. And in fact, these low-cost Windows computers are out there right now. If you go to Best Buy or any store, there are models like the HP Stream, and it's spec'd just like a Chromebook. It's 11.6-inch screen, 2 gigabytes of RAM, 32 gigabytes solid state memory, no hard drive, no CD, nothing like that. $199, which is actually priced, I mean, right in there, even under some Chromebooks. In fact, there's an interesting, I just got done writing a new version of a book called My Google Chromebook, which will be out in about a month or so. So I've got Chromebooks on my brain.
Cool.
It's interesting that the Chromebook market, more and more manufacturers are jumping onto it, and they're actually moving the price points up. You know, in fact, the latest Chromebook released is a 15-inch model, not a little one, but a big old 15-inch model from Acer, selling it for $249. You know, so that's moving up the price point on Chromebooks. Microsoft, with HP and a couple other manufacturers, are moving the price down on Windows PCs. So you say, okay, well, Microsoft's just going to kill off the Chromebooks. Except I don't think that's going to happen. And I'll tell you why. Chromebooks are big in two markets. They're big in the consumer market because of price, primarily. And they're also big in the education market. In fact, many school districts are dumping Apple and the iPads in favor of Chromebooks. Because, honestly, you can do more with a keyboard than you can on a tablet. But the other thing that IT people like about Chromebooks, it's a cloud-based operating system. They don't have to manage these things. Or it's very, very easy to manage them. I mean, you make one change, you know, in the cloud, and it affects all the computers that you've got out there. You know, you don't have to bother with installing software on each one. It's all cloud-based stuff. So they really like the management and the security. I mean, you don't get viruses on a Chromebook, period. You just don't.
Yeah.
And those are the advantages that have really pushed the Chromebook to the fore in the education market. And they're not going to switch to a Windows PC. I mean, even if the price is lower, because the Chromebooks do exactly what they want them to do. In fact, one of the reasons we're seeing some of the higher priced Chromebooks is because they're more rugged models. You know, they're not quite as cheap as the models used to be on Chromebooks. So you kind of want that if you got, you know, kids working with them. But I think at least in the education market that they're going to Chromebooks not because of the price, but because of it's not Windows.
Yeah. 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 And I, you know, and absolutely, you're right. I know I've talked about this a little bit on air before too, is that, yeah, that management of the devices is such a monumental issue within, especially within our school districts, because it takes time, it takes expertise, it takes, in a lot of cases, it takes a lot of hours of work. And if you are using like iPads, for example, is a great example of this. And iPads are wonderful and they're very flexible and they're very useful within a lot of the classrooms and the educational context. And what you want to have happen, of course, is that a child would have their iPad and they'd walk from one classroom to another. As they get into the next classroom, the assignments are there, whatever applications they're going to use for that day are going to be there. But all of that takes, in addition to everything else and the preparation, it also takes bandwidth to get those apps downloaded onto the iPad, especially the iPads if they don't have, you know, if they don't have as much, and they don't have a lot of space for a ton of apps. That can be very, very frustrating. Whereas the Chromebook, as you say, it lives in the cloud so solidly, and they've done such a great job with Google Apps for Education, allowing that management to occur, and Go Guardian, and there's other ways to really effectively manage across an entire organization. It's going to be really tough. I hadn't really thought about that, but you're absolutely right. It's going to be very, very difficult for a school district or other large organization to kind of, you know, build in the cloud operations and the management tools that are already there and already available and in use for the Google Chrome.
You know, the other thing with the Chromebook in education is, with an iPad, a device is wedded to a student, right? Mm-hmm. You really can't sign in multiple people onto an iPad. Whereas with a Chromebook, you know, it doesn't matter. You have 10 or 20 Chromebooks in the classroom. Each kid, doesn't matter which one the kid picks up. He signs in with his own account, and all his settings and apps are there because it's all cloud-based. So it's even, you know, you could think of it as being less money in hardware over the long term because of that, mm-hmm. also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in fact, my kids, our school district, we're in, for people that are local, it's District 76, which is Diamond Lakes School District, which I'm actually an official voted in board member.
Congratulations.
Which, yeah, I don't know. After last Tuesday's meeting where we announced our intent to RIF, reduction in force, I don't know if I made the right choice here. No, it's good stuff. But the fun thing that's happening there is all the kids are getting Chromebooks. And in fact, both my son and daughter have Chromebooks from the school that they've brought home. And just like you say, I mean, that was one of the coolest things was, knowing that, oh, if you forget your Chromebook or this one breaks or whatever, 2 minutes later, you've got a new one in your hand. Boom, you're done. You just sign in and all of your settings and everything else, they're all there. They're all the same. And yes, you could have, you know, a half dozen people using multiple books or whatever. And it really doesn't make a difference. Or when you get home, you log into your dad's computer, set up Chrome and log into the Chrome as you, and, you know, just the Chrome browser, not even the Chrome OS. And it's all connected and it works wonderfully, wonderfully.
And I got to tell you, the Chromebooks now, I mean, say you're just a normal consumer. I mean, my stepson's at college and he's got a Chromebook.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily. I mean, he does his homework on it because you can do Office online now, mm-hmm. as well as Google Docs. So, you know, you've got, you know, pretty much everything you need for productivity you can get from the cloud. I mean, he just basically sits around and listens to Pandora and watches Netflix, which, of course, you can do on a Chromebook quite easily.
Yep.
I mean, you don't need a $400, $500 computer or a $1,000 Mac or whatever to do what most people do these days.
Yeah.
So, you know, from a consumer standpoint, if you're looking at a Chromebook for $200, $250 or so compared to a Windows PC at the same price, it's, I don't know. I mean, that's a toss-up. Why would you choose one or the other? I mean, you don't really need Windows to do what most people are doing these days.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And my wife, when we were looking for a new device for her, we wound up purchasing a Chromebook. And there are some things that she gets frustrated with. One of the issues with these lower cost devices is just that it has a lower cost device feel. So you've got this kind of, it's a little plasticky, and the keyboard isn't like a real keyboard. It doesn't have that nice feel. It's got that chiclety feel to it. And, you know, the mouse trackpad is a little cheap too. It doesn't have the nice sensitivity you'd want. And I could see if, you know, Microsoft is able to come in with a good operating system and they wed it to good hardware that's still reasonably inexpensive, I could see that still being compelling, because at that price point, I'm wondering if people will say, oh, especially for the individual use, you know, not so much for the schools and for other large organizations, but for the individual user to say, I am comfortable with Microsoft. I know what they're about. I can either try this completely new thing in this Chrome OS deal and maybe not have everything I want, or I can pay a little bit more, get a little bit better hardware, and I'm still using Microsoft Windows, which I've known and loved for 30 years. That I can see that being very, very compelling to people.
Well, I don't think the hardware is going to enter into it at same prices, okay? If you look at the 199 Chromebooks versus the 199 Windows PCs, like that HP, whatever it was, the HP...
Stream.
Yeah.
Yep.
They look the same. It's the same chiclet keyboard. It's the same cheap touchpad pad. In fact, you compare the HP Stream, which is a Windows device, with the HP Chromebook, they're the same. Other than, you know, the inside, you know, the operating system's different. They're the exact same machine. So, you know, at the $200 price point, you're going to get the cheap hardware. Now, as you go up, you know, you look at some of the $250, $280 Chromebooks, there you're getting a better keyboard and better touchpad and oftentimes a bigger screen also. So, you know, I'm not sure that that you're going to say, oh, I'll go to Windows to get better hardware. No, that is more the price point of what you're willing to pay for. But here's an interesting thing with price point. Here's what I want to know. The Streams and these other low price Windows machines are coming out at $199 and up. I mean, you can get them with a little bit more memory or slight. HP's got a 13-inch Stream for $229, okay? Well, I'm looking at Best Buy right now, and also for $229 is a regular old laptop, a Toshiba 15.6-inch laptop with a 500-gigabyte hard drive. Now, admittedly, it's a cheapy laptop, but it's got a real keyboard, and it's got a bigger screen, and it's got a hard drive for $229. So if you are in the Windows ecosystem, and you look at the $199 machines, and you know what they look and feel like, and then you look at $229, $249, where you got real laptops with real hard drives, now that's where I'm thinking, you know, why do I want the $199 machine?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That is a really good point. Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that, but absolutely. Hey, you know, we're getting close. I promise people, and I really, really want to hit on this too, is to talk about a little bit of a divergent topic, the Internet of Things. And before we do that, Dave, like I said, you, Dave, know more and have more experience with the Windows stuff and the Microsoft Windows 10. Was there anything that you wanted to make sure we covered before we switch over to the Internet of Things?
No, everything that I've heard is so apt. You know, the way the viewpoints you guys have on it, the advantages of the various operating systems and hardware, you guys are doing a great job covering it.
Okay. And of course, Mike will be back on hopefully when Windows 10 is actually officially released, and we can talk about some of the options and some of the special things that you can do with it that we didn't or were not able to or weren't aware of before it actually was released. So we'll have to schedule that. But on to now, I know you just came out with a book on the Internet of Things, and this is a topic we've talked about. It's exciting to me, but it's also scary. But I'm going to let you tell us. So how do you describe, what would you call when you say the Internet of Things? What do you mean by that, or what is meant by that?
Well, the current internet I describe as an internet of and for people. I mean, yes, it's got websites and search engines and stuff like that, but it's used by people. It's connecting people through all these things. The Internet of Things is different in that it connects things. Now, things that people use, perhaps, and things that are of use to people, but they're connecting things. They're connecting devices and sensors. together, both on a small local scale and on a global scale. So you take something like your house, all right? With the Internet of Things, we start looking at devices that we're calling smart devices. I don't know why. Most of them are pretty dumb devices, but they connect together to create a kind of intelligence. So you get a thermostat like the Nest thermostat that learns when you're home and what temperatures you like. And it starts talking to your garage door opener. So that knows that when the garage door opens that you're leaving the house, and when it comes back, it knows when you're back home. It also talks to your washer and dryer. So it knows that when you're away, that it can go on to a slower drying cycle to use less energy. It talks to, you know, your television set to know what programs you're walking and it watching. It talks to your security system. It talks to your sprinkler system. So all these things in your household get connected together. Like I said, in and of themselves, each individual thing on this Internet of Things is dumb. It's just a device. It's a sensor. But when they start connecting to each other, they can start making decisions based on the data that they collect to automate all sorts of things that we have to make dumb, trivial little manual decisions today.
And the thermostat's a great example because it not only connects internally and can make some decisions that way, but also too is connecting to externally to the bigger internet and saying, oh, it looks like by the weather forecast, the temperature is going to drop today dramatically. So I'm going to start upping the furnace setting and increase the temperature in the house earlier in the day so that we don't have to have, you know, a single moment of discomfort.
Well, and it even saves you money. It talks to the grid. I mean, a lot of power companies now are installing what we call smart grids that have some more data transfer and data collection within the power grid so that the Nest thermostat can talk to the smart grid and know that, hey, by the way, there's a heavy power load today because it's really hot. Let's not run the dishwasher, okay, until the power load goes down and the power cost then gets a little bit cheaper, and we'll go ahead and run the dishwasher then after dark or whenever. So, you know, you start making savings that way, and then you start kind of extrapolating out. Well, we've just been talking about a single house. Well, what if this house talks to this house, or this house talks to the city grid, and the city grid talks to the state grid and the national grid, and all of a sudden everything's talking to everything else and collecting all this data and making autonomous decisions. And that's where the intelligence comes from, is everything talking to each other and all this data being collected and something happening with it. So, you know, for it all to work, there needs to be a lot of software on the back end to make sense of all this collected data. You also have issues, of course, of privacy. I mean, if all this data is being collected, what can be done with it? But that's part and parcel of anything, I think, these days.
Yeah. Although I think some of that could be avoided depending upon how it's implemented. You know, I think you touched on part of that is that what we have right now are these autonomous home safe, you know, or smart devices, you know, the Internet of Things happening within your home. Now, if you look at it and say, well, hey, let's tell all of these, you know, each individual house, look, we're in California and water's at a premium. So, you know, don't run the dishwasher or the washing machine more than once a day, something like this. That's one thing. And yes, I think privacy concerns could be there. But if you are a homeowner and your smart devices have access to that bigger pool of data, and you can say, hey, on a scale of 0 to 10, how green do I want to be when you're configuring this? An 8, then when it gets data, it says, okay, you said you want to be an 8 on economizing water and other things. Well, we're going to adjust your schedule in life for that, keeping the privacy, but using the data for the best purposes.
The privacy thing is going to be an issue and we're in the early stages of all of this. I mean, what we call smart devices today are not very, very smart at all. I mean, it's going to get a lot smarter, a lot more connected, a lot more data collected. And we have to decide how much privacy we want and in exchange for what. I mean, here's an example. You say, okay, I control my own green settings within my house. I want to be this green or that green, conserve this much energy or that much energy. Or maybe what if my power company says, we'll control it for you. And in return for that, we'll give you a discount on your power rate. If you want to control it yourself, you don't want us going back down the grid that way, fine, but you'll pay a higher rate for that. If you want this discount, you're going to have to give us some control over your devices. Then as a homeowner, what decision do you make?
Yeah, yeah. Now for me, I don't have as many of the privacy and security issues that I know Dave does. You know, for me, the decision would be easy. It's like, you're going to give me some money and it's going to make life better for people. Go for it. You know, I'm all for that. Dave, I know you worry more about that kind of security and privacy sort of things, and there have been some real security issues that have come up now that we're adding more and more of these devices. What would your call be on it, Dave?
It depends on how much money you gave me.
yes.
If you give me enough money, I'll tell you everything you want to know about me.
That's right.
Any kind of data you want. But I also see this being applied. Like, there's speculation now that Elon Musk is going to come out with a household battery that would make renewable energy sources more practical, right? The problem now with wind or sun is that when that energy, if there's a surplus of that energy produced, what do you do with it? His solution is theoretically, there's speculation that it would be a battery. In Germany, what they're doing with that surplus power is manufacturing hydrogen, or they're trying to. They're getting to that point. They're in the early stages of creating hydrogen with that surplus energy.
Hmm.
So systems like this, or information and data like this, could assist with making renewable energy sources more viable, I think.
Yeah. Now that's all, though. This is all assuming, you know, we've got this kind of clean flow of information in all of this. But Mike Miller, I don't know if you discuss this in your new book, The Internet of Things, but one concern that keeps coming up is that flow of information, just like any information we have that we put on the internet, can be used maliciously by people that shouldn't be any part of it and have no access to it, but they can. Now they can hack your refrigerator. They can access your stove.
Well, and maybe hacking a refrigerator isn't too scary, but what about hacking your smart car? Mm. You know, as you get more smart connectivity within your car to report, you know, that so you know that something's going to break before it breaks and it calls the service center and schedules an appointment for you and all that rot. Well, you know, what if somebody can actually hack into your car system, which, of course, they can. You can hack into anything. And, you know, we're talking about self-driving cars at some point down the road, both figuratively and metaphorically there. Mm-hmm. But what if somebody hacks into your smart car and runs you into a wall or uses your smart car essentially as a suicide bomb to drive you into a government building? Mm-hmm. You know, that's conceivable.
It's a new way for hackers to meet chicks, you know.
Well, you know, it can happen already. There's an issue on some of these smart TVs that actually have cameras in them to watch your movements so you can control your TV with your hand, you know, instead of your remote control. Well, with Samsung, they were actually leaving that on most of the time. And somebody could hack into that and see what's happening in your living room while you're watching TV.
Mm. Man, nobody wants to see what's happening in my living room.
I mean, it'd be a boring stream for most people, but still, you know.
Yeah.
But that is the thing. As all this stuff gets connected, that not only do we have privacy concerns in terms of where the data goes and who uses it, all right, but you also have the issue of, well, if something can be hacked into, somebody's going to hack into it. So these are all points to access anything else. And to be honest with you, especially in the consumer electronics field and the appliance field, you know, the TVs and refrigerators and the smart washers and dryers, these guys are eons behind security wise than the computer industry is.
Yeah.
They're just not even thinking of this yet.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely it. And especially, you know, when you start talking about interfacing so many other components together, you know, just from that physical security standpoint, if you have a device that maybe it only works on, you know, 10% of the home smart devices, but you just drive around war, you know, just like war dialing back in the 80s, and mm-hmm. You find that garage door that you just have to push the right button and boom, it'll open that garage door open for you and turn off the security system. And now you've got access to the whole house, not just from a data standpoint, but physically. And you can even, as you said, look ahead in advance to say, well, let's look through the Sony camera or the Samsung TV camera and make sure there's nobody home while I do this. That's a frightening thing.
Yeah. Well, Sony's coming out with a new security system that's going to protect us all, right?
Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah. Now, what are they going to do? No, what's the bootloader going to look like on that thing? That's what I want.
No, that's a joke. They were hacked so badly, right?
Yeah.
That brings up the other issue. I mean, we're just talking about homes right now. Well, the smart technology, the Internet of Things, is really going to be big in offices and companies and big businesses. Well, again, you know, if you've got a smart coffee pot setting in a break room someplace, maybe that's the way the hacker gets into Sony next time. You know, I mean, it just takes one weak link. Right. Yeah. And with the Internet of Things, there's going to be a lot of links.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's exactly right. Speaking of lots of links, we only have time really for a link from you. So, Mike, I want to know more about the Internet of Things. I also, too, you have got an amazingly deep and broad back catalog of information and books and so on. Where can I find out more about the Internet of Things? Where can I see the newest book that you've got out?
Go to my brand new or relatively brand new website. Ooh. It is millerwriter.com. That's Miller, WRITER.com. And all my books are listed there.
Excellent. Millerwriter.com. That will be our cool site of the week that we have. Mike, we're going to do this. We're going to do this again soon. I will try really, really hard. I can't promise that I won't, but I'll try really, really hard not to forget that we'll do it again. Man, thank you so much, as always, for really getting us a great perspective and a fantastic amount of information about not only Windows 10, but also the Internet of Things that are coming through. And at millerwriter.com. We'll let people go there and find out even more.
Well, thanks for having me on. It's always fun.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Dave, I'm going to say goodbye to you, too. Take care, guys. We got Rob Shot First coming up. Have a great weekend, Mike and Dave. We'll talk to you
next
soon.
Next time. Bye. Yep.
See ya.
Take care. Mike Miller, Molehill Group, millerwriter.com. Definitely go check that out. I will also put that as a cool site of the week, as I said, for the podcast, which you can find at facebook.com/techtalkwrlr. Or if you're not a Facebooker, just go to techtalkwrlr.com. I'll also put a link directly to the Internet of Things book so you can check that out. That sounds very, very cool. We got Rob Shot First. Robbie Rigel is going to be on putting some science in your ears. So don't go away. I'm going to leave us. I know I've been doing a lot of Two Door Cinema Club, but I do like them. I'm going to do this. This is off their album, Tourist History. The name of the song is What You Know. You've been listening to Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 LPFM in Round Lake Heights, Illinois. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. Stay tuned. Rob's going to be at you in just a minute.
It's what I want to do. I am